This is just a quick message to say that the following podcast contains some strong language and adult humor. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Theatre Podcast, a podcast that aims to talk all things theatre. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tom.
And each episode we get together to talk with theatre professionals, emerging theatre artists and members of theatre in general about their work, their earliest memory of theatre and what makes theatre so special to them more generally.
So, to put it simply, we just chat about why theatre is so great with people that love theatre.
So, if like us, you're just a lover of theatre in general, this is the podcast for you. You can listen and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And while you're there, it would be grateful if you could drop a 5-star review and leave a comment about who you'd like to see us speak to in future episodes. And where can people go if they want to know more about us, Tom?
That's a good question. You can catch up on what we're up to on Twitter and Instagram at Talking Theatre Podcast. And similarly, if you're interested in collaborating with us at all on an episode, you can email us to be slightly more professional at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
And on this week's episode, there'll be some of this. How do you kind of approach somebody like that to get involved with a project like this?
Blackmail. No, I'm joking.
There'll definitely be some of this.
Actually, you know, it's all bollocks, really.
And even this.
If you sit on the fence, you're going to get splinters. And sometimes you just got to say it how it is and say it for what it is.
So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast. And what are we waiting for? Let's get on with the show.
Hi, mate. How are things?
Hello, Luke. Yeah, no, things are good. Things are good. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. We've had a good past week in terms of the theatre world. Well,
yeah.
Some elements of the theatre world in the sense of things started to be programmed or publicly shown to be. A few controversies here or there, but I think it's best that we gloss over them for now and we'll leave those to Twitter to deal with. I think that's probably...
Yeah, but the positive is things are being announced, things are starting up again, official declarations of performances happening this year are occurring.
Yes.
It's the most convoluted sentence I think I've ever said, but it's good. It's good to see.
It is, and it also means that... It will give today's guest some in-person work in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, this guest, and you'll see it in the title, will be in some of these audiences that have been announced. So, shall we get into today's episode?
Yes, let's fire away, Luke. Today, we are delighted to be joined by media and learning specialist and theatre writer Carl Woodward. Having had a theatre blog for around 6 years, his blog has ideas above its station and is an entertaining guide to the current theatre landscape. Over the years, there have been guest blogs, campaigns, controversies, quizzes and proper journalism, and his content has featured in places like The Telegraph, The Stage, The Times, The iPaper and more, which he comments on as being nice. In his day job, he is a cultural education leader in the broadest sense and who has developed and delivered inspiring and high-profile creative participatory projects.
His recent work has seen him work on Speak Up with Dante on Die and the Duke's Theatre Lancaster in January 2021 and Our Voice, again with the Duke's Theatre, a project delivered through a series of interactive workshops with young people from the GRT community led by Bryony Kimmings, Amy Hart and Emma Rucastle. Aside from this, he has recently run a campaign against drama schools charging audition fees while in lockdown. As part of the campaign, Carl raised £600 via crowdfunding and donated it to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School for travel bursaries and is here today to talk all things theatres with us on the Talking Theatre Podcast. Hi, Carl. How are you?
Hi there. I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
Very good indeed. It's great to have you on and have a chat.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm wearing my mint shirt.
Very fabulous indeed.
It's very fresh and funky.
How's your lockdown been? Have you been coping?
I can't complain because I'm safe, I'm warm, I've worked, you know, and so many people have lost their jobs in this sector and continue to. So I'm very thankful for that. Good days and bad days, it's a roller coaster. So I'm all right. I'm sick of Netflix. I think I've watched everything on Netflix, but there's always something that appears.
I think everyone's managed to complete Netflix or Disney Plus or something along the lines.
Yes, but no, I'm all right, as it goes.
So to start with then, Carl, on your website you say that you write about theatre mainly and interview theatre makers, which you have done a lot of, to be fair. So how are you feeling about being interviewed yourself? And is it something you've done before?
I've been asked to speak at things and, you know, I've been interviewed. Recently, I did a Q&A for another blog, which, again, it was new to me.
I saw that.
No, I haven't, really, no. I like being the interviewer.
I like being in control, knowing what's coming up.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's great to talk. It's great to meet new people, albeit virtually, and especially people who have similar passion. Yeah, it's good to go out of your comfort zone sometimes, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's great to hear. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's kind of jump back to the start, if that's all right. And we always start the podcast by talking about this, and we've had some interesting answers this series so far on this. So can you remember what your earliest memory of theatre was, and did you actually enjoy it?
So I did listen to your podcast yesterday, and I thought this question might come up, and I was trying to think, what was that memory? And for me, it was actually going to Panto, which is obviously most people's first memory of theatre. Mm. And it was Cinderella at the Lighthouse Pools Art Centre. And it had Matthew Kelly as Buttons. So this is a long time ago, boys. I just exfoliate. But yeah, essentially, I went up on stage, and I think I would have been about, I don't know, 4 or 5. And my mind was blown to see, like, the audience see these sets, these costumes, the storytelling. It really stuck with me and inspired me to want to see more theatre and to get involved in theatre, like through acting and drama at school and youth theatre. And yeah, that's it really. Then I got the bug.
So would you say it was literally from the very first time you started theatre and you can remember it that sort of gave you the bug for theatre and you just kept going from then?
Yeah, and just to see the power of live theatre on an audience and for all kinds of people, especially in a place like Poole in Dorset, which has got very mixed socioeconomic backgrounds. And yeah, everyone was, you know, engaged and involved and kind of entertained. And I just remember the colours and the music, and it stuck with me, and it inspired me to want to see more theatre and find out more about live theatre.
Yeah, so it really struck a chord with you from an early age. So what point did you then in your life sort of keep going with theatre and then decide, yeah, a career in theatre is where I want to be headed? Was there another point later on?
Well, I wasn't very academic, actually, at school. And the only subjects I kind of excelled in were the ones I enjoyed, which is quite common. But it was only when I sort of realised you only needed 5 A to C's to progress on to college. So I just focused on my 5 favourite. And one of them was drama and one of them was art. And obviously maths and English and whatever. But, you know, that kind of opportunity to kind of find my voice and to learn more about drama and more about the arts. I pursued through school, then college, then university, then to postgraduate level. And yeah, got my first job at Salisbury Playhouse in the participation and learning department in 2010, I think. So yeah, I've really always been passionate about theatre and been really interested in the power of theatre to reach communities.
Nice.
Absolutely. I think that you can tell that from the way that you're kind of articulating your passion, and like for the listeners at home, like just actually seeing Carl on this call now, like you can actually see the passion actually coming out of his face, and it's really great. So Thanks. At this stage, Carl, let me kind of delve into more of our guests' work. So we wanted to start this section by talking a little bit more about our voice, by asking
how did
it come about and what's your role as a media and learning specialist within a process like this actually consist of?
Great. So let's be very clear on the defined nature of my existence. One is this kind of wasp at a picnic, you know, like this kind of purveyor of live theatre and commentary on the industry. And that's my personal time. And that has also been a freelance area of my work. And then my day job is art and cultural learning and managing projects such as Our Voice. Now, Our Voice is a project for young Gypsy Roma traveller girls, and it is an autobiographical theatre project that is run from the Duke's Theatre in Lancaster. It was a project that was in existence before my post, but when I arrived, I wanted to kind of take it to the next level, involving Bryony Kimmings, who's, I don't know if you've ever seen one of her shows, she's just an amazing, inspiring artist, who has a background in autobiographical theatre and storytelling. And she made sense to apply, you know, A, the profile, and B, the calibre of skill to the learning of these communities. And it was originally intended to be in person, but it had to go virtual. Yes. But that actually played to the strengths of the project for lots of different reasons through the lockdowns. So yeah, that is one project, very recent project, and it is running. It runs weekly on Thursdays. The engagement has trebled through this working virtually, because, you know, traveler communities are very, very difficult to work with. And if you do a bit of scoping around, really hardly any theatres in the UK manage to engage with them successfully, let alone with that kind of level of kind of ambition. And that's also made me want to do it. You know, it's a challenge. And they're also the most remarkable people. You know, they're very inspiring. They're very, very thoughtful and very resilient. You know, stuff we'll never learn or know because we haven't walked in their shoes. And that's been a real education for me. So that's what I see as a success, is when I can also learn something from the people that I'm kind of herding, you know?
Yes.
That's not the right word. Herding cats.
For sure. Having such a strong sense of community engagement in sort of the arts and everything like that, it's something we've discussed before on the podcast, but in order to have something successful in theatre, I think both of us would agree that having an engagement with the people around the theatre, whether it is space or just sort of the ethos of the company itself, is so important to make it an effective statement and so on. It sounds like this is really a really positive project in that sense and regard. Really,
yeah, cool. No, I'm very proud of it, and it will continue to you know, grow. I think so many positive spin-offs from doing it as well. You know, like a casting director from the BBC got in touch with me because he'd seen the work we were doing and said, we're casting an adaptation of, I think it was Gulliver's Travels or something, and there's two young female sort of twin sisters about 12 years old, 8, 10, 12 years old, in this show. We'd like authentic casting. So could you help us? Would any of your participants be interested in auditioning virtually? But, you know, that kind of currency you build, that trust with that particular community is gold dust, I think. But it does take time, and it does take commitment, and it does take dedication. And, you know, there's a reason that they are suspicious of people who are non-travellers, and that is because they've been sort of systematically failed by society. So, you know, that project is a result of, I'd probably say, decades worth of work with the traveller communities. So it's just taking it to the next level. So, yeah, that's going really well. And Amy Hart is wonderful. She's a doll, and she has traveller heritage. And for anyone who doesn't know, she was on Love Island. But, you know, what she does is kind of brings that kind of X factor to the project, which is full of excitement. Because she also has Gypsy heritage, she speaks directly to the girls. You know, they love fashion, they love makeup, they love Instagram. And so her encouragement alongside Bryony's imparting of knowledge is actually, it sounds crazy, but it works.
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic pairing of role models to sort of inspire the group. Yeah.
Yeah, and people might be snobbish about it. You know, people actually were snobbish about this. You know, it's a reality star. That's not theatre. Well, actually, it doesn't matter. Theatre is for everybody.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, you know, and she's actually just incredible. She's really a decent human being.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that from what she's done as a result of Lavanna. I mean, I never really watched the show, and I didn't know of her because of that, actually. I knew of her from other things that she's done. Obviously, she's just done the What's On Stage Awards, hasn't she? But how does...
Yeah, and she loves theatre.
Yeah, she absolutely does. She absolutely does, and you can tell that. And you can tell the passion that actually comes from her. So I guess I've also got to ask, how do you kind of approach somebody like that to get involved with a project like this?
Blackmail. No, I'm joking. You just basically...
I think we've got a clip for our introduction.
No, you basically, you know, so let's go back to the start. Setting up the blog, you know, I set it up on a very basic WordPress website, and it was as a result of me running a project called Young Critics, which involved leading arts journalists coming to it when I was working as education manager in Winchester at Theatre Royal there. And that ran for 3 seasons, and it was very successful. And a part of it, the participants, the young people, were encouraged to set up a blog. And I just at the time thought, well, I might as well set up a blog because I have opinions and I have a right to have an opinion about this industry because there's a lot wrong with it.
Absolutely.
As much as the wonderful things that there are to discuss. And it was a very basic WordPress website. And I started off, actually, my first interview was a Q&A with Mark Ravenhill, the playwright.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And he hadn't given an interview for 10 years. And so it was, but it was, you know, what got him interested was the questions were just fun. Mm. I think one of the questions was, what's your favourite emoji? And, you know, he really enjoyed that kind of no real agenda, but actually, you know, fun and informal way into finding out more about his personality. And the blog just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then I had to upgrade it to a proper website because it was, you know, interviews with people were starting to be quoted in that stage newspaper or were being, you know, cited in national press because I was looking in places and I was covering people that the mainstream arts press were not. And that's not criticism. That's just a statement. You know, I was looking in different places for different characters to tell their stories. So how do you get someone like that involved? Well, with her, we've just found an affinity for musicals, and we talk about musicals on Twitter. And then one day I just said, why don't you do this project? And she said, yes. I mean, you don't ask, you don't get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think basically, again, you build trust with people, you meet people, you find your tribe, and you go from there, really. And it doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah, have very tense, sort of just treat everyone around you with respect and like people, and everyone is everyone. We're very similar as people, especially in the theatre industry. So if you just treat people with respect and stuff, you'll go a long way and you'll meet some amazing people down the line.
Yes, definitely.
So over the years then, and you've touched on it a little bit there, Carl, in terms of starting your blog, you've attended quite a few press nights, haven't you? I remember, for example, seeing a video of you at the What's On Stage Awards a few years ago on your YouTube channel. So I'm interested to know, like, how do these media/press nights and events actually work? And, I mean, do you get treated differently to the way me and Tom would when we guys are paying
audience, for
example, or?
Well, essentially, it's a really murky area. But also, I think it will evolve into a new way of being, as a some timeline, post-pandemic.
Yes.
And actually, you know, it's all bollocks, really.
Really?
But essentially, you know, you just get a glass of cheap wine and a free programme and a good seat. And that's not me complaining, but that's the difference, you know. So, but I mean, I don't know where, it's really hard to know where to start with this sort of thing. Press nights are operated by press managers, okay,
yes,
and press agents. Now, there are a number of them. Some of them are good, some of them are not so good.
I can imagine, yeah.
And some of them are maniacs. And so, you know, it's with whether they actually want to hear the truth, you know. And I've found a couple of times PRs have not wanted to hear the truth about whatever they're trying to sell. And I'm afraid, you know, some people might shut up, but I won't be silenced. And people can blacklist me all they like. I'll buy a ticket.
Yes.
And I have had run-ins with some PRs because, you know, I have principles and morals, and occasionally, you know, they're called into question when it's like, you know, you can't say this or you can't say that. And I say, actually, I can say whatever I like because I'm my own editor.
Yes, absolutely.
I went to Thriller Live, and I went with a friend. And have you seen Thriller Live?
Yeah, and I'm hoping you're about to say something I've thought for a very long time. Let's go ahead.
I've got to say, it was an abomination.
Yes, and, yes, you are right.
And essentially, I just found it like torture, really. And then afterwards, I tweeted something like, "God help me," you know, like something like fun. It's not meant to be. I don't ever comment personally on a cast member. I don't ever comment on a creative. I don't ever name anyone. But, you know, I will say when something is just not good enough, it's shit. And especially with that ticket prices that are charged. And it was terrible. I'm sure you will agree.
I genuinely do.
The press agent went nuts, you know. He went crazy that I'd said this. That's the end of that one. I was off his Christmas card list. But, you know, you get quite a thick skin. And I think, yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you know, you've got to just keep going with it and demonstrate your worth, you know, and prove that you have hits, prove that you have followers and followings, because obviously anyone, but the good side about theatre and writing about theatre is anyone can start a blog. Mm. That's also the bad side, is that some people should not be allowed to start a blog, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyone can say I am, you know, a leading blogger. And, you know, it's here and there. It's questionable what that looks like. Just, I don't ever talk about visitors to my website, but last year my website had 250,000 visitors.
Wow.
Now, that is from years of just keeping going and generating fresh content, having original opinions, sticking my neck out on a lot of occasions, and often going against the grain. And I don't regret any of those moments. So I think press nights, they're always very sort of artificial, because it's also a lot of the time it's friends and family and it's comped.
Yeah.
You know, tickets are all free. But, you know, real good theatre writing or criticism, it's got to come from a place of honesty, with no agenda, with no kind of, you know, you do see a lot of these blogs and people writing about theatre giving 5 stars to everything, you know, like Skittles. And I mean, I don't give stars and I don't review as such. I'm more interested in the theatre makers, the people who make theatre and make it happen, and the people who make those people make it happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, press nights, a part of me loves it because it's kind of farcical and you get to meet a lot of interesting people. Part of me hates it because, you know, it is artificial and it's like a false atmosphere, you know? It's like everyone does a standing ovation. Everybody's cheering, even when it's terrible.
Yeah.
It does sort of expose the two sides to the theatre world that we all know. The big showbiz side and then the genuine, like, lovely people trying to support each other side as it goes along.
Yeah, I've had a ball. You know, I have had a ball. I've been to so many fabulous press nights and I've met so many interesting people. And I am so thankful that I managed to cram in all those trips and those occasions and also share them with people along the way. You know, I've often given my plus one to students or to older people or to theatre followers of the blog. You know, I find that really empowering to see other people who might be able to afford some of these shows. You know, I went to the King and I at the Palladium years ago, and think of the seat. I always find out how much the price of the ticket, the seat I'm sat in, is going to cost.
Yes.
And because I think that's really important when you're writing about theatre, is to weigh up what exactly is going on economically with the ticket pricing and where the money is going. Is it being shown in front of you in the set?
Yes.
Is the caliber of the creative team on display? Is it flawless? Has everyone tried their best? Or is it just shit? And, you know, the King and I tickets are £150 each. So, you know, thankfully that was a real gold star show. But if I had paid that much money, I'd be, you know, wanting a gold star show. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want it to be lackluster.
No. Tickets, no, definitely. No.
Amazing. So let's just, one thing we did want to talk about is, we touched on it briefly in your introduction, but we'd love to hear more about your drama school audition fee campaign and sort of for all the listeners and stuff, tell us how it first came about, the reaction that initially had, particularly with the schools themselves, and then the crowdfunder campaign and everything. Just tell us all about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty busy while that campaign started. That's one example of a campaign I've kind of just kicked around. But, you know, it started with a writer called Ben Wetherill, who was a friend, who he actually wrote a very comprehensive blog detailing what these drama schools were charging and for what service throughout the pandemic. And often they wouldn't be giving feedback to candidates, and it was on Zoom. You know, it was often pre-recorded, so they'd just be sending in a video for someone to watch that cost them £60 for someone else to watch, and sometimes they wouldn't even get feedback. And it just riled me, because it's just unacceptable, really. Yes. And I got together with Ben and I said, let's drag them through the coals on this. And we contacted all the principals. I think most of them replied and just tried their best to wiggle out of it and justify the cost.
Sounds about right.
And, you know, then you've got a really good leading by example drama school, which is Bristol Old Vic School.
Mm.
And they had significantly dropped their fees to £15, whereas most were charging £55. And they also have bursaries and everything, and a lot of these places do, but they were the most measured and they were the most decent, the most honest. So amongst all this kind of fracas, I set up a crowdfunder, and yes, it raised £600, but with gift aid, that's £800.
Yes.
And so that is actually going to Bristol Vic Theatre School, and that will be for travel bursaries once the lockdown is lifted. So if someone can't get from Newcastle to Bristol because they can't afford the train, that money will be sent to them. Now, I know it doesn't sound like a lot of money, and it probably isn't in this day and age, but actually they're really excited to look at ways that we can find more funds to keep it going.
Yes.
So that's great, you know, and I think it does, you know, if you sit on the fence, you're going to get splinters. And sometimes you just got to say it how it is and say it for what it is. And a lot of this was exploitation, and it really impacted most disproportionately those students.
Absolutely, of course it does.
Who could not afford to go to audition. It excludes them, and I think that's wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. It's when I was auditioning for drama school, it's one thing that I was acutely aware of. I'm in a fortunate position to not be affected by it, but the concept that you're paying for them to see you felt really bizarre to me, and it didn't feel right. And especially in a pandemic as well, charging the same price to send in a video, it's gone unchecked. Yeah, it has, and the exclusivity of getting a place anyway is sort of the rarity of getting a place. It's so extreme. The fact that you're paying that much to just have a chance is just obscene.
Yeah.
And also, when you're going to audition, it's the train, it's the hotel. You know, all these extra hidden costs that people sort of are shouldering. And I think no one's making them audition for drama schools, for God's sake. But we do need people that represent society.
Absolutely.
In our drama schools, not just, you know, privately educated people who can afford or whose dad was in Macbeth at the National once.
Yes, and as you said in that example of the train from Newcastle to Bristol, I mean, that's probably 2 days. And it's not just the actual student themselves, it's the parent that's also got to go with them. It's not just the actual audition thing, which we can all sit here now and agree, is probably ridiculous. It's the £200 here, and it's the £50 here, and it's the food that you then got to have, and it's the overnight stay, and it's the train, and it's, you know, there's a very, very small percentage of people that can do any more than one or two auditions at the very, very most, and it's not right, and I have to applaud you for it, because it's phenomenal. Yeah. It really, really is.
It kind of got some interest, but, you know, some places won't cover it because they're too worried about advertising deals. Mm-hmm. They're too worried about pissing off the principals. They're too worried about not never working again. And I couldn't care less about any of that crap. And neither can Ben. So I'm not speaking for him, but, you know, he's also someone who's very passionate about what is wrong and what is right. And, you know, you're always going to upset somebody somewhere. So if you're doing it for the right reason and you're making a change to try and make things better for other people, then who cares?
Yeah, it's important to get the voice out and get people to hear what you're saying when it's wrong. Yeah, for sure. So we, as part of this podcast, we want to be reaching people who are similar position to us, and to me and Luke, sort of going into the theatre world for a first time, into the scary but also quite accepting place. What advice would you give to anyone who is starting off or just looking to get back after the pandemic, or even now during it, I suppose?
Well, I think, you know, the pros are that it's a clean slate in a way, and there's a real opportunity to grab and seize the day and make your own work and start your own sort of adventures. And some of those traditional gatekeepers or people in power that might make decisions about certain things have either kind of moved on or retired or are stepping down. You know, today the artistic director of Tamasha Theatre has stepped down. He's been with the company a long time, and he stepped down because he wants to check his privilege and let someone else have a go. Now, if everyone who needed to do that did that, then the industry would be a much more representative place.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of possibility, there's a lot of opportunity. But equally, I think this pandemic has really laid bare the inequalities in our society to a horrifying, scandalous level. And I think that the road back to some normality or recovery is going to be hard. So I think having that reality check of knowing that is really going to be important. But equally, as I said a minute ago, the opportunities and the possibilities are kind of really boundless. And the digital sphere that we're kind of moving into, in that hybrid way of working, I think younger people like yourselves who are much more savvy or you know, open to working with that kind of technology, I think you'll thrive.
We hope so. That'd be really cool. That'd be really nice if that's true.
Absolutely.
But fantastic. Amazing.
So then finally, we kind of like to finish this.
Finally.
I know. Isn't it just?
I wanted some more questions about musicals or some feuds.
Well, how about this then? Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Here's an agreement to all our listeners out there. That there's multiple things that we haven't yet covered in this podcast, but it just means that we're going to have you on again. But I guess to kind of finish on a light-hearted kind of note, you've had lots of these, I'm sure, but if you were to pinpoint that one fondest theatrical moment or experience within the work that you've seen or that experience, what would it be?
Follies.
Okay.
Wow.
That was absolutely straight to the point.
At the National Theatre, did you see Follies?
I saw it the second time, not the first time, but the second time.
So, yeah, both productions were amazing. Follies 1.0, as I called it, which was filmed for NT Live. One day National Theatre at Home may put it on its collection. Who knows? That's another of my campaigns.
Yes, I have been seeing that.
But Follies is a masterpiece production, and it's kind of like once in a lifetime, goose flesh, all the stars align in the theatre galaxy, and you are just in very safe hands, and you are something like that doesn't come along very often. Whether you like Sondheim or not, whether you wanted an interval or not is irrelevant. That was a world-class production, and I saw it 8 times.
Wow.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think, I just think Follies. It's all about Follies.
I would have asked, if you had to have one show, sort of first thing you see after the pandemic, any show in the world, what would it be? But I think it might be Follies.
It would be Company. Company. And do you know what's tragic? I was a big Company fan, West End. Did you see Company, guys?
I did, yes.
And did you like that?
I'm going to admit to the podcast, like, I can accept Sondheim's work, but I'm not, like, the world's biggest fan. Like, I sat, like, for both of them, I was like, this is cool, but I don't know, like, I was pleased to have seen both the performances.
Yes.
But personally, I don't know that I would have, like, gone back 8 times, for example.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I'm certainly pleased that I saw Company and Follies.
Good. Yeah. Well, Marianne Elliott is, I think, one of our greatest theatre directors.
Yes.
In terms of making work accessible to audiences. But I was due to fly to New York, right, on Sondheim's birthday weekend, for an event to watch Company on Broadway.
And oh, really?
And the pandemic kicked in. I've never been to New York before, so that's all set. And obviously everything closed. So I am assured Company will come back to Broadway, and I will be going out to New York. Because, I mean, it's devastating that Johnny Bailey isn't in it and Rosalie Craig isn't in the Broadway version, yes. But... you know, it's amazing that it's a British homegrown production, Elliot and Harper Productions, who are just wonderful. So yeah, I think that's what I would. I'm done with the kind of the West End and Sixth the Musical. I want to go to Broadway.
It's the most unique experience you'll ever have. It's just unbelievable. Really. It's really crazy. So
hopefully this year. I mean, let's pray.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's really hope so.
We can hope.
We're handling it over there. We're handling COVID over here in a certain way. And over there is a whole different issue, I think. But
yeah, but at least Trump's gone. Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Gosh. We can celebrate absolutely. The little things, can't we? And if you do have any socials you'd like to plug, so if anyone wants to get in contact with you or read any of your blogs or campaigns and so on, can people find you?
So my website is just mrcarlwoodward.com, and you can find my contact details on there. I'm on Twitter, Mr. Carl Woodward. I'm really interested in also running guest blogs, you know, so if people are doing something and they're struggling to get any kind of coverage, or they feel they're not being, you know, listened to by, say, the stage or what's on stage, because it doesn't have, I don't know, some celebrity in it, then I say to them, 500 words, you've got a week, here's your brief. I'll put it on the blog and I'll send it to the mailing list. And that is often also drawn in attraction from other outlets who have originally snubbed them. So that's been really quite a privilege to do that as well.
Oh, amazing. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a laugh to talk to you.
It's been a brilliant episode. It really has.
Yeah,
well,
and
we'll
have to do another down the line and have gossip about the musicals and the feuds
we
and everything.
We should do
going
one
on.
About feuds.
Yes.
I think our listeners
we've already
absolutely
got
adore that idea.
We've got season 2 ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank
keep
you so
up
much
the great work, guys. Keep
thank
up
you
the great
very
work.
Much.
Thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing what you do next. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that marks the end of this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast, and a massive thank you to Carl for taking the time to speak with us today. It was so nice just to hear about theatre from a different perspective, I thought, Tom.
Yeah, hearing the sort of effectively the press side,
yeah,
hearing about the ins and the outs of how
I had no
works,
idea.
It's very different. You don't expect, because we obviously see the from the stage effectively, but watching it from an audience and seeing that side of the industry, it's nice, it's cool to hear, and it's such a good laugh as well.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. So yeah, massive thank you for Carl for taking the time to speak with us today, and hopefully we can catch up again in a future series of this podcast. But we hope that you have enjoyed the episode as much as what we have, and if you have, then please let us know by subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review and comment on what you found interesting in whichever way you happen to be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, and you can stay up to date with whatever we're up to on Twitter and on Instagram at the Talking Theatre Podcast. And as well as that, if you are interested in collaborating at all with an episode, you can email us at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
So all that's left to say is thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next week. Goodbye.
Adios.